It's Friday. That's the good news.
That's the good news, Wendy. That is the good news. It is Friday. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. Should you want to join us and talk, if you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200 would get that done. Hi, Wendy.
Did you watch the game last night, Bill?
Oh, I totally forgot about the game.
Bertrand texted me last night saying, Bill, what did you say in your text, Bertrand?
I think Bill's about to break up with the Bears again.
Done.
How can you base it on one stinking game?
Because I've been right every time I do this. I watch the first game. I say, that is not a playoff quality team, and they're not.
They weren't last night.
The Bears scored three more points than you and Steve and I last night. Is that going to get them anywhere?
Well, no. The Cubs outscored them three times.
I know. Right? Mary Vandeville pointed that out. Mary, good call on that.
But, Bill, you were not correct last year.
Yeah, because they lost their first game last year.
And how did that end up?
They didn't win the Super Bowl, but it was a great season.
Yes. You know what? They don't want you. They don't want
it's
you.
Mutual.
Fine. Whatever. You cannot get on our bandwagon when
I don't
it starts
know why,
a going.
Like, why would anybody take a hammer and hit themselves in the head for 3 hours every week? What could any... Did you get any joy out of last night's game? Did you get a single ounce of joy from
Here's
anything
the joy
that
I
happened?
Got. I had high school open house, so that started at 7, right around kickoff.
Yes.
7:15, I guess. And 7:20 was kickoff. So
ironically.
It is. That's a sign.
Yeah.
TV production was the first class, and they had it on during the open house. So I was watching. I checked the score the next period, and it's like, oh, my God, we are up 3-0. Yes!
And the only class they should show a Bears game in is Simple Math.
You're hurtful and hateful.
And that little Panera Bread is so cute, isn't he?
All right, I'll give you that. That guy's adorable.
Who?
The kicker. I call him Panera Bread.
All right.
Panera.
Mary, you're right.
Well,
you know, you're right.
I was going to wait till I got home to watch the game in its entirety with Jim, because he was supposed to wait for me, and then I couldn't wait. I had to check out what was going on.
You could watch the highlights of last night's game in less than a minute.
I bailed towards the end of it to catch up on the double eviction on Big Brother.
Yes.
And
wise
they
move.
Scored more. Julie Chen Moonves.
Right. They always score more on that show than on the Bears game.
Here are my thoughts. There was a lot of pressure. It's the beginning of the 100th NFL season.
Yeah.
20th anniversary of Walter Payton, the statue, a lot of excitement, the Packers. They choked.
Right.
And I have one question that I will ask you and Steve and Mary, and maybe we should ask Adam Hogue. In these preseason games, I know they give these new people time to practice.
Yes.
But why aren't they working on some kind of congruency and get your teams together so you're ready for the real game?
Because that would make sense.
Doesn't it, though?
Yes. Well, it used to be that the preseason, you played your regulars a little bit. And then you played the guys trying to make the team a bit. But now, to protect the guys, they don't want anybody to be injured during the preseason, so they just don't use them.
But then they don't
know. And then they're not ready for the season.
They can't work together.
Right. So you had two teams that really weren't ready for the season yesterday. It's just that the Packers, because they're the Packers, and the Bears, because they're the Bears, you knew what was going to happen.
I didn't know what was going to happen, and Aaron Rodgers got sacked a few times, too.
Did you get any joy out of last night's game?
I didn't watch it.
Steve, you watched the game. Did you get any joy at all out of last night's game?
I have to say I was very much enjoying the beginning. I even texted my friend and said, this year I'm going to take time to actually watch the games rather than jump in and out. And
it's
then
just,
I went to bed in the third quarter.
The Bears are an exercise in frustration.
No,
every single
this is
season.
The year. They're going to turn it around. I am not giving up. I'm a Bears fan. I can't be anything else.
They had a very exciting year last year.
And they lost their first game last year and turned it around.
In worse ways, I would think, because they were crushing the Packers last year. And then
a one-legged man came out on the field and beat them.
Exactly.
I was so excited when the 85 Bears came out on the field. I thought, let them stay.
Right. Put those guys in the game.
Even in their walkers.
Suit
they
them
could...
up.
Yeah. Right. Please, let those fellas play the game. They know how to win.
Yeah, but that was the beginning of the game. And I had high hopes. But then, after the first quarter, it just went downhill.
The highlight of the game last night was Ed Obradovich's comments.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
I just heard...
Because I'm just a guy who's watched football. That's the guy that was in the trenches, and he takes it pretty seriously.
You can't give up on the whole team for the whole season.
Done.
If they start winning, you cannot speak to us about it. You will have to sit there with tape over your mouth.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, they're going to turn it around. Bertrand and I and Mary will be all, yeah,
Last year, as you saw, as the season progressed, and I even said, I was wrong.
You did.
I admitted that I was wrong. And I take no joy from them losing. I'm just used to it because I've watched it for 50-plus years.
I've watched them with the Cubs for all those years, too.
Yeah.
So why do you turn around on them?
I don't know. There's just... The Bears, even in losing, have this weird swagger and cockiness that I don't understand.
They were not cocky. Trubisky was ashamed of himself. Matt Nagy was saying, I'm sorry to all the fans. And
I want it in writing.
Oh, jeez.
I take note. Steve said to me today, you must be very happy that they lost.
No, I didn't say that.
How did you word it? What did you say?
You're taking a little joy in it. Right. You had a little pep in your step this morning.
Because he likes to be right.
Everyone likes to be right.
Some more than others.
But it's because they made me realize I'm not going to waste 3 hours.
It's
3 hours plus.
Game. How did they make you realize that in one game? One stinky game.
Because they've done that in the past.
Yeah, but they've also won in the past.
Let's look at their record on opening games. I'll find their record online of how they've done in opening games and then how they've done the rest of the season afterwards. You can look at a team and just go, they are not of the quality, they're not of the caliber of a team that you need to be to get into the playoffs. What NFL team watched the Bears last night and started shuddering, going, oh, I don't want to play these guys?
Al Michael said something kind of odd last night. He said they were nearly an undefeated team last year. The games that they lost by so few points.
Oh, right. That's
true. I think
two
of them were in overtime.
Right. So, that's true.
I know, but it's still a stretch to say they were nearly undefeated.
Right.
I don't base my fandom on stats. I base my fandom on my heart.
But you saw something in that team last night that made you say they have some sort of chance.
That's all I have.
You have hope in your heart?
I have hope in my heart and Bears fandom in my heart. There's no other place to go.
All right.
We're stuck
there
with them.
There are other teams in the NFL.
Why would I root for them?
I used to wonder that, too. I always used to think, how could you live in a city and root for another team? But the obvious answer is because other teams win.
Well, is that what it's about? It's all about winning?
That's a big part of it.
This is.
That's a huge part of it.
Who are you going to root for then, Bill?
I don't know.
You're going to go back to the Miami Dolphins.
Nah, the Dolphins aren't great either.
So you can't, you can't just root for someone who's great. You have to root for someone that you love.
Who's more upset, Bill with the Bears or Wendy with the Bill?
No, with the Buffalo Bills.
That would make sense.
All right, this is it. We got the best text. Folks, the game was over when the 85 Bears came out. They were all waving white flags.
That's true.
That's hilarious.
All right, a break and then more frustration. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Oh, so many great texts. If you saw the Bears game last night, very, very frustrating game. 10-3. There was a time during the game, Wendy, that I thought I looked up on the screen and it looked like it said 1st and 40 for the Bears. I know that's not possible, right? 1st and 40, you don't see that very often in an NFL game. The key, this according to 630, the key is to be a casual observer. I stopped emotionally investing in the Bears after the Super Bowl back in 2007. However, I haven't perfected this. I'm still in a bad mood this morning. I still feel myself getting drawn in. Just when I'm about to surrender and go all in on them again, they do something to remind me to hold back.
No other choices,
I understand
guys. That. This one breaks my heart. From 920, tickets to Bears game for me and my son, $1,100. Travel time to Soldier Field from Wisconsin, 3.5 hours each way. Coach apologizing for a pathetic performance, priceless.
Yes.
See, that's what is upsetting.
309 says, I've lived in Chicago for 30 years. Bill, if you're looking for a team to root for, go to the Skol side. You can root for the Vikings. We'll have close to 60 Vikings fans at the house on Sunday for a cookout and watching the game. I will consider that.
Somebody wants you to be a Cowboys fan.
I would consider that.
Patriots were 11-5 last year, another option.
Yeah. Well, the Patriots, that's just an example of...
I hate them.
Why do you hate them?
Because
they've been nothing but successful.
It's just boring. If you win all the time, there's no excitement.
You would rather have our team, a team that consistently disappoints.
Because one day they will appoint.
Wow.
Not disappoint.
All right. I'm going to have a pillow made with that saying on it.
I kind of like that, actually.
I like that, too.
I am here.
If you're listening, Wendy's idea is yours.
I'm here. I'm here for the long haul. There's no other way to go.
Why do we accept this? Why do we accept
failure?
Because
what are we going to do?
I don't know. At some point, we should just stop. We just got to go. They're obviously not built to win. We should just stop. It's too painful on a weekly basis to be disappointed like this, on a yearly basis.
How could Bill have remained a Cubs fan all those crappy years before winning the World Series? Because you love baseball. Admit it, you don't like football as much.
No, I like baseball more than football.
That has something to do with it.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was rooting for two failing teams. Right.
That's the thing. We got to get a second failing football team in the city.
Hurtful and hateful.
One is not enough. If we're going to fail, let's lead the league in failing. Actually, the Bears can't even do that. There have been years where they have the ability to be the worst team, and then they always screw that up at the end and win a few games so they don't get the best draft pick.
Why not be a Packers fan, says 309. It's the only team you can own a part of as a fan.
Yeah, that's true. You can buy shares of the Packers.
Why would I do that?
Well, not for you, but if you're a Packers fan, you can. By the way, did you see? I don't know if you got to see this because I know that you saw the game later on. But they had the guys who called the game. They dressed them in 1920s garb. Did you see this?
No. Boy, did that work.
Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth.
Oh, I did see that.
They're wearing clothes from the 1920s from 100 years ago.
In honor of George Halas?
In honor of the league being 100 years old. So they so obviously don't want to be dressed that way, and I was trying to think how they convinced them, because Al Michaels has some power. Chris Collinsworth has some power. So who sat them down and go, guys, I know you don't want to dress like this, but it's better for everybody if you dress like it's from 100 years ago. It'll be fun.
They were making fun of it, though.
No, they were.
That's the only thing I saw. And yes, I DVR'd it, but why? I got to tell you, I DVR'd it and was ready to watch it, but I tuned in to find out what was going on. Bertrand texted me. There was no point for me to go home and watch that.
I know.
If they won.
Right.
I would have watched.
Right.
I just kept hearing, you know, flat.
So wait, that's true? If they had won, you would have watched it, but because you knew they lost, you didn't watch it?
I just heard the performance was...
lackluster.
Flat.
Let's
Bertrand.
Say... Let...
I think that was your exact word.
Yeah.
I tuned into another radio station, I'm sorry, because I was in the car, and I wanted to see what was going on, and I just heard, oh, Mitch Trubisky's in trouble again.
Yes.
So, and then the outcome, it's like, I can't.
Steve, am I imagining
it? You listening to Larrivee on TMJ?
Yes, I was.
Thanks.
Steve, was it not first and 40 at some point? It was, right? It was first and 40.
All right, Bertrand, are you going to watch the next Bears game?
You know, I...
God, where's that? Yes.
Well, yes. It's a Monday night game. It's a Monday night game, I think, so I'll watch it.
See, just put them all on Sundays.
The next game
they don't
Sunday.
Do it on Sundays.
Oh, Sundays?
Oh, it is on
Sunday?
It's a
3:30 game.
3:30?
Oh, right. Yeah, a week from this Sunday.
Oh, you know what? I'll be in Ireland, so no.
That's what Steve's doing just to get away from a Bears game. He's going to Europe.
We are Chicago's own. How come you two aren't?
It's just too many years of being slapped.
Again,
at
you
some
were
point,
slapped
you go, Stop
by the Cubs.
Slapping me.
No, I kind of made a commitment this year to follow more closely because I wanted to be involved in it. But it's hard because it's the nicest time of year.
Yes.
You know, September Sunday afternoons.
Right.
It's kind of tough to stay inside.
The last several years, when I come in on a Monday after the Bears have lost yet again, everybody's just got this gray, drawn look to them, and I don't have that because I'm like, I didn't waste my time watching them fail. All they know how to do is fail.
I don't care anymore what you think.
But am I wrong? Did you see? I
didn't
asking
watch
you the
game,
same question.
So no,
to any Bears fan, did you get even a moment's worth of pleasure from last night's game? A single moment's worth of pleasure?
Well,
it
yes,
wasn't there.
We did.
The defense was okay.
In the beginning, they were absolutely swarming.
Remind me which team won the Super Bowl with the defense that was okay.
The defense was pretty good.
They sacked Aaron Rodgers, what, five times?
Does the letter W or L stand next to their name after
last
night's game?
And this is where I say he enjoys this a little bit.
I know.
I don't enjoy it.
You can tell in the tone of your voice.
Yeah,
you're done with it. That's fine. We don't want you. Can't get on the bandwagon. And if we start winning, get out.
All right.
Take an Uber.
All right. That's fine.
This is random, but 219 has texted us, and we had talked about the Patriots, and I just don't like the Patriots. And Tom Brady, I'm just...
He's a champion.
He's a cheater. So it's all about winning, even if you have to cheat to do it.
No, I didn't say that. But this is a guy who consistently wins the Super Bowl.
He's smug, and I don't like him.
But doesn't a guy who consistently wins the Super Bowl deserve to be smug?
No. Why can't you be a winner on the field and a winner in life? Be nice to people.
I think once you've achieved what he's achieved, you could be as smug as you want because you've proved yourself. You've proven that you know what you're doing.
So you're saying it's an okay thing to be smug or it's a good thing. I would never want to be smug, ever.
Cutler was more smug.
He was
far more smug than Tom Brady, and I don't think he could beat a group of fifth graders in a football game.
I would like to see you and Jay Cutler and Kevin Hart go to the next Bears game.
God. Las Vegas Oddmakers, what would you put that one on?
That just makes me laugh thinking about it.
That would be fun.
But 219 has texted a random thing. When my little grandson tries to cheat on a board game, I call him Tom Brady. I explained why we now use that term for anyone who cheats. I am so with you, 219.
He didn't cheat last year and he won the Super Bowl.
Well, I'm not saying he's not good.
Right.
But, you know, a cheater's a cheater.
But if they said...
And we don't know that he didn't cheat. We just know he didn't get caught.
Right, he didn't get caught. If they said, we will trade you... This is a 10 years ago trade. The Patriots for the next 10 years to the Bears for the next 10 years. You wouldn't take that trade? A team that just wins and wins and wins and wins as opposed to a team that disappoints?
I hope you people out there are watching online because Wendy does not know what to say.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, obviously, if they do it and he becomes a Bear, fine, whatever.
It's not going to happen.
I know. That's why you're asking me these hypotheticals that there's no way.
Right.
All right. You asked, did anyone get any pleasure out of last night's game? 815 says 14 moments of pleasure, 1 field goal, 5 sacks, and 8 punts.
All right. None of those took a full minute.
815 also says, if anything was fabulous, how about Jim Cornelison?
He was fantastic.
That was pretty great.
It was fantastic. And that kicker, to Mary's point, adorable.
I like the Virginia McCaskey intro video.
Yeah, his eyes. They're so cute.
Yeah, his eyes are adorable.
How does she stay at that long game? Did she stay till the end, Virginia McCaskey?
I don't know. I would imagine she did.
I saw a picture of her. I saw they were showing her at the end. Yeah, just sitting very stoic.
Yep. That's the right pose to strike.
Mm-hmm. How ironic, the previous game was lost due to the kicker, and last night's game, the only points that were scored was from the kicker. Have a great day.
That's true.
Thank you, 630.
Yes. The voice of reason.
And this is the most prophetic one. 773, the only thing more sad than last night's loss was losing the Popeye spicy chicken sandwich.
Yes. A moment of silence. All right, we'll take a quick break. News is next, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Are you looking at some stats, Bill, from our Bears?
Yeah, the first game of the season in 2019, last night's game, they lost to the Packers. A year ago, their first season game, they lost to the Packers. In 2017, their first game of the season, they lost to the Falcons. In 2016, their first game, they lost to the Texans. In 2015, their first game, they lost to the Packers. In 2014, they lost to the Buffalo Bills, considered by many in 2014 to be the worst team in the NFL. The Bears lost to them on opening day. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight losses for the Bears, who only made the playoffs once, I think, in those 6 years.
Sometimes we have a bad show. Do we stop and not come back the next day?
No, because we'd be done. We'd never be here anymore.
All right, good point. Still to come, we are going to talk to Walter Jacobson's son, Peter Jacobson, who has got a regular role now.
Yes, on Fear the Walking Dead. He's a regular on the show.
And he's been in other things before?
Many other things.
I didn't even know he was an actor.
Oh, he's great. He's so good.
We're going to talk television to Megan O'Keefe from Decider.com, but it's news time right now at 10:30. This is sponsored by Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace. Here's Steve Bertrand.
I probably should have cleared this with you prior to going on air, but before the show, you had mentioned there was something going on at your son's school that you liked very, very much at the open house, right? Everything go okay at the open house?
Yeah, you meet with the teachers. I always found it weird that when your kid gets to probably junior high, definitely high school, you have this open house like a couple weeks after school started.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, in an elementary school, you'd go mid-year so
right.
you could see all their projects.
Right, but not anymore.
Mm-mm.
Now it's at the very beginning.
Isn't that kind of weird?
What happened? Why did they change that?
I just think they like to keep the parents involved on what the curriculum's going to be.
Was it well attended last night?
No.
I bet not.
There was one class I was the only one there.
Are you kidding me?
Uh-huh. Oh, no, there were two other ladies. I'm sorry, they walked in late.
That's crazy.
There were not very many dads.
Out of a class of probably 25 to 30?
I think this is a lower class of maybe 18.
Oh, still, that's a low percentage.
I know.
Because I
will not stand for that.
That's bad. Come on. So the assumption is they're staying home to watch a football game rather than meet their kids' teachers?
We can't say that to be sure. Maybe they were out of town. I mean, really, you don't know. I know there's a LTTV class, a TV production, which I want to take. It'd be weird if I'm in there when my son's in there.
No, why would that be strange?
So there were four parents, and I think there are 20 kids in that class.
If you're the child in this equation, do you feel like your parents are letting you down?
I don't think the kids really
care
if you go. You know, this is just the curriculum. I like to go because I like to meet the teacher.
Yeah.
And just know what's going on.
My sister-in-law has been a teacher for years. She says that the decline of parents coming to these open houses is alarming, that every year it's less and less and less.
I don't get that. I'd love to see what the kids are going to study. I miss those
Me
things.
Me too.
I drove by the high school last week. I'm like, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
You could have gone to Dylan's. I would have taken you.
Really?
I gave Jim a pass. Because he just sits there and doesn't really care. So
it's the only complete pass made in Chicago last night.
So I'm like, I like to go. And I think that shows the teacher that you got a parent that's here trying to help.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
But there was an interesting thing. I learned last night that they don't have to take the Constitution test anymore.
Oh, is that true?
Because in its place, they have to take a civics class, which is required to graduate.
Right. They don't do the Constitution test anymore because no one in Washington follows it anyway.
That is a good point. See, I wish you would have been there with me last night. You could have jumped in and said that.
That was brilliant. Thank you, Steve.
But a requirement to graduate, you have to take all 4 years English and history.
Wasn't the Constitution test for decades? That was a must. There was no negotiating that. If you were going to graduate, you had to pass that. Because I remember in my school, there were a couple of kids who didn't, and there was a lot of fear that they would not be moving on until they did.
I only remember taking it in eighth grade. I don't know if I took it in high school. But I guess if that was the requirement, I did.
Oh, all right.
If That's I took so it now, I'd flunk.
Yeah.
I forget so much.
Yeah.
But they have to. The requirement is English all 4 years and history. And I thought this was pretty amazing. They have taken years of experience and student suggestions, and they now combine. It's called American Studies, and there are two classes with an accordion thing, so you can get the rooms together.
A room divider?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like to call it an accordion thingy. So one is history, one is English. But they combine sometimes the whole group, sometimes it's separate. But what they do is they give you required reading that corresponds to that part of history that you're studying. Like the Depression would be the Great Gatsby, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
So then they have found that the kids do better on both sides because they're putting it together. They're going to be reading Devil in the White City this year, so I don't know. Is that modernism? Is that what era? See, that's where I would flunk.
Well,
I don't know what the connection is to that.
Yeah.
But that's what they do. They put the piece of literature up against what they're studying historically.
I've never heard of this.
Isn't
that
kind of cool?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
A lot of extra work on their behalf to choreograph that properly, but good payoff. And they're showing that it's successful.
Yeah. And these teachers have been grouped together, these two teachers, for many years. They're both long-term teachers. One has been there 19 years, one 26 years. And they just kind of work together
like
on the curriculum. And
so it's American history.
It's called American Studies. It's U.S. history in one classroom, and right next door, it's English an English class.
And how often do they combine? Is it constantly throughout the year? Or is it once in a while? How often are they combining?
They weren't clear on that. They said sometimes when they're focusing more, they're two separate periods.
Right. Oh.
So technically, you know, fifth period would be English, sixth period would be history,
yeah.
But a lot of times they just stay in there for that whole time and get a little 5-minute break in between whatever, in case other kids are changing classes.
That's so smart.
I really enjoyed that, and the teachers were great and super funny.
Yeah,
and
I bet if any parents had showed up to this thing, they would have also liked it.
That
for some
all
reason,
I'll be 100% honest with you. There were probably 8 or 9 sets of parents out of a class of probably 30. I would bet.
That is a low percentage.
I know, I'm kind of shocked.
That is a very low percentage.
So if you're a teacher...
That's what I mean. I didn't want them to get a bad vibe about Dylan or me because I was there.
Right.
Screw the Bears. Just for a minute.
Now
I'm back on the Bears.
Right.
But I thought that was a really interesting way to do things.
I wonder if that could be taken in with other classes also. I mean, the behind the scenes on making just those two classes gel must be tough, but I wonder if they went for an entire theme with other classes, if that could also work.
Yeah, what would you combine?
I don't know what else you would combine. Science would be, I guess you could do science, I guess.
With what, though?
Oh. Yeah, that's true.
You know, these
two...
Yeah,
then it gets tricky. Yeah, the two that make the most sense are the two that they're doing, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I have a confession to make. I was very bored in history class in high school. I didn't...
How come?
It was too old, because I know that's what history is.
Did you point that out to the teacher?
No.
This stuff already happened.
But now I am so ashamed, because history is the most fascinating thing. I love knowing about it now.
It's quite a turnabout.
Yeah, because when you're in high school, I was worried about who was having a party that weekend,
right,
or what we were going to do after school. How will I do in my basketball game? My head wasn't in it.
There was no time for history.
I didn't make time, and I should have.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty fascinating.
I liked it a lot. And that phrase, those that don't understand history are doomed to repeat it, that was always running through my head. I wanted to understand what happened in the past, just in case there were signs of it in the future.
History was my favorite, by far.
I really?
That would have been my guess with you, Steve, for some reason.
Yeah,
you seem like somebody that would have really, really appreciated that.
I liked science.
That was your class.
Yeah, I liked that.
Hmm.
And their first chapter that they're discussing now is immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And,
timely.
Well, that's what I wanted to
so
ask,
timely.
And I probably should have, since there were only 8 parents there.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know how much they're tying into what's currently going on to... Because I don't...
Well,
it's history.
We've talked about this before. The one thing that I wish schools would focus more on would be current events.
Yep.
And I know the argument is always, but then you're going to get the teacher's slant on current events. And to some extent, I have to admit that is kind of true. Whoever's teaching it, you're going to get their version of whatever the current events are. I don't know how you avoid that.
Yeah, that must be tough.
But I just think it's so important in a society where information is everywhere. You want to comprehend it. You want to take it in and figure out what's leading to what. And I'm always disappointed when I find out that schools really aren't teaching that much.
That's what I think why I was scared to ask, because I would have been disappointed if they didn't. They have to talk about what's going on at the borders now,
right,
don't they?
If you're studying immigration and you're ignoring what's happening right this minute, you're not doing it the justice it deserves.
And the teachers are trying to prepare the kids for real life, and real life is what's happening today.
Yes. So how do you do that?
I don't know.
Swing that without getting, I mean, whoever's teaching it is going to give their version of it.
Right.
I don't know how you avoid that.
I wish Bertrand was with me last night, because he might have asked that question. Sue has called us, 312-981-7200. What's going on, Sue?
Hi. I just wanted to add to your conversation about literature and history. When I was in high school, I learned nothing in history. And now that I'm almost going to be 70, I've been reading historical fiction and learned so much. So I think that's what the kids should, it would add a story to what you're learning in history.
Great idea.
Sue, how did you get through school without learning anything in history? I'm confused by that.
I didn't either.
You didn't anything? Nothing?
I don't know how I did. But a lot of good this does me now.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it and learning so much about what I didn't know then.
It's pretty fascinating. I don't know if I was ready for it. And when I was in high school, there was this thing called seminar-centered history. SEMSEN is what you called it. And half of it was audio-visual, so you'd go to the library and look up things and watch movies and stuff.
Right.
So I watched a lot of historical movies and learned from them, but then the textbook part of it, I blew off a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I mean, I didn't say that I graduated well, but I did graduate, so I must have learned something.
All right. That's it, Sue. Thank you
Thanks,
for calling.
Sue.
You're welcome. Bye.
And they are skipping around a lot, too, which they thought was more exciting for the kids. They're not just going in chronological order of things, so they're flipping between immigration. Maybe they'll do the modern era, then they'll go to the Depression. They're flipping, so it's not chronological.
Yeah.
They're just teaching. It just seemed, I want to go back to high school.
Oh.
At this age, though, in my 50s. Because I think I'd do very well.
This sounds like every Melissa McCarthy movie I've seen in the last 5 years. I'm sure it'll be great. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more to talk about. We're 312-981-7200. If you'd like to jump in, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, I know there's other things to talk about. I just want to address a quick text. I was saying how I wish so badly schools would focus more on current events. That was a class that we had an option of taking in school. I found it very, very helpful. Some schools still teach it, but it doesn't seem to be as prevalent as it once was. 773 says, ask your kids if 9/11 is covered in their history class. My daughter took an AP history class. It was not mentioned at all. Don't you think it's imperative for especially kids right now who were too young to really appreciate what was going on September 11th to get kind of at least a broad history of what led to it, what happened because of it? It's so important. How could you not teach that in school?
A couple years after 9/11, we were having a block party, and I was walking to the fire station with the neighborhood kids, because we were just going to shake their hands and congratulate them on being heroes and offer our condolences for the fallen heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with all these kids. We're walking around downtown, and they were asking me questions about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And this one very smart girl says, you know, I can't believe those airplanes flew into that building by accident. And I said, oh, honey, that really wasn't an accident.
Right.
They were there to hurt us.
Right.
And she said, no. My mom and dad said it was an accident. And she was in like maybe fifth or sixth grade. And I had this idea, and I still do. And someone's going to steal it from me because I don't know where to begin or how to do it. But I wanted to make a documentary using young school kids to say, what do you know about 9/11?
Yeah.
Give me your version of
it.
And then just present the facts. And I wanted them to show it in schools because I felt...
Good idea.
That they need to know.
Right.
And you don't have to get in huge detail.
Right.
But an accident?
Right. That's alarming.
That was weird.
But look at all the major news stories. And believe me, I'm not taking shots at high school kids here. But unless it's part of the curriculum in school, Brexit's a great example.
Yeah.
That's a major thing going on right now. But I bet if you asked almost any teenager, what do you know about it?
Ask me. I don't know that much about it.
Right. Maybe we should sit in on these classes with high school kids.
I would do that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Paula has called us. Hey, Paula, what's going on?
Hi. Love your show. Longtime listener.
Thank you.
Thanks,
funny.
Paula. That's nice of you.
But
thanks.
I wanted to agree with Wendy and another caller. When you talk about history, I didn't have a really good history background because when they taught us, Wendy, they taught us, we memorized dates and battles or events, and there was no, like, they didn't put the story into history.
There were no details, really.
The context of saying, okay, well, this was going on in France at this time, this is what was going on in China, and this is what was going on in Italy, because then it makes sense. And I think that's what happens when we watch a really well-done film, like a Schindler's List or Hacksaw Ridge, where you can see something that actually happened and learn the context of what was going on and what people were doing. And I think that's why, like the other caller, I love reading not so much straight history, but, you know, put on a Ken Burns documentary, and I'm a sucker for that because he knows how to tell a story.
I'm so with you on the documentary version of it, but if you're watching a drama depicting those events, a lot of times the writer and or director is going to take some liberties with the facts. So even though you think right. you're watching history, you're watching kind of a tainted version of
Everything
history.
Everything I know about right. Pearl Harbor, I learned from Ben Affleck.
Right. Right.
But there weren't very many documentaries when we were growing up. Now there are so many right. that they could definitely use it to their advantage.
That's so
and
true.
And you're right. You can't take the movies or the, especially the movies, I guess, or TV programs as everything is exactly as it's presented. But at least you get a little bit more of the, like I said, the context and the story and what, I guess I like what individuals or families were going through at that time.
That makes perfect sense.
Know? And the impact of not only what happened, but what was the impact on people? When you look at World War II, you know, you can talk about what went on in the Pacific and the European theaters of war, but also what happened here at home and how many women went in and pitched in and went to work in factories and victory gardens and everything else. And to me, that's the interesting part.
I agree with you, Paula. And if it's interesting, you learn more.
Oh, sure. So anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. Bye.
Then I came home from the open house, was disappointed very much so by the Bears. And then I had a medical thing.
Oh, no.
I don't know if it's really medical.
Oh, no.
I had a tick on me. Have you
ever had
a tick?
I have not.
Bertrand, have you ever had a tick?
You mean where you just kind of, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
Maybe I've had them pull, like... We used to have other things like, I'm not going to say it. Is there like a little worm, a chigger they used to call it too?
Yeah, I think so.
I noticed a little, what I thought was a mole on my stomach. And I'm like, boy, this is like a really dark black mole.
Yes.
That's weird.
Yeah.
And something just in my head went, I bet that's a tick. Now, it wasn't that big.
Were you out in the garden or something?
Well, I was in Indiana. Over the weekend.
Honestly, the home of ticks.
No, no, I had this Snyder family reunion. We were in Indiana, and under the pavilion, there were all these like spider webs and little spiders that were getting places.
They usually drop off trees.
Is that true?
There were tons of trees, and we were out there playing bocce ball.
Yeah.
And
were
I
you
won.
Showing your midriff?
Yeah.
No.
You weren't?
No.
I mean, I'm asking because that's how it would get
no,
there.
I don't know if it got on my clothes or something.
So then did you burn it off?
Well, here's the thing. I surprisingly did not really panic. And honestly, I looked at it and I said, boy, this mole is really super dark and tight.
And moving.
It's stuck in you.
Oh, it does? Really?
It's burrowing into the blood.
So then I'm like, let me examine this. So I went in the bathroom. I got my tweezers. And
your tick tweezers?
Yes. And I just pulled straight out.
Yes.
And sure enough, it was stuck to my skin.
Was it
and there
around
was blood.
When you moved?
No, it wasn't.
It was eating your blood.
Yeah. I know, but so has it been eating my blood since Sunday?
No, it would have gotten, like it would have been bulbous.
Well, it wasn't very big, so then I looked it up and it's a nymph tick.
That was my guess. You probably had one of those nymph ticks.
Because a nymph is a baby.
Yeah,
it was
right.
Tiny.
Oh.
So, because I thought you'd burn them, like you'd light a match and burn them off.
I looked online, of course.
No, you take them off and then you burn them in the sink.
Why?
Just to kill them?
That's
you can't crush
I just threw it in the garbage can.
They don't die. Those things don't die. You got to burn them.
You can have a million of them when you get home.
I just threw it in the garbage can.
We learned something about
your body, Steve.
No, they said.
Yeah, because to get it out.
Because it burrows its head in your skin.
Yeah.
And then you were in the old days, you would say, you know, those Ohio blue tip matches, you'd light one.
Right.
And then you'd blow it out. And then with the hot tip, you put it on the tick. And it supposedly pulls its head out going, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, quit it.
But I just tweezed it out. I put it on a Kleenex and there was some fresh blood there and there's like a little tiny hole in my stomach where the tick was.
You need cock.
And and then I didn't know what to do, so I got alcohol.
Wendy, that's not the answer to everything. Come on.
Rubbing alcohol.
Sure it was.
And I cleaned the area with the rubbing alcohol, and then I looked online after that, and it said, clean it with rubbing alcohol, and then put a little Neosporin in there, because if... It doesn't look like there's anything left in me.
How big of a hole is in you?
It's like the size of a big poppy seed, maybe a sesame seed. Oh.
Usually the thing about ticks, though, is when they fall from trees, they fall in groups. So are you sure you don't have any others?
I was standing there giving myself a self-examination.
Have you
and
checked
I'm like,
your head today?
Oh, because
yeah, you got to check.
No,
they get in your hair, and then it takes a while for them to get into the skull.
Check the dog.
The dog, has flea and tick medicine, and I took some of that this morning, too.
Did you take a dose of that?
Took the dog medicine?
No, I'm kidding.
I'm just watching you on the monitor. You seem like you've been scratching your hair more often than normal.
But, you know, now...
I could be wrong.
I just was worried because, I'm sorry, guys, but Lyme disease...
no laughing matter.
Karen, you know about Lyme disease?
Yes, and, you know, I know you're making light of this. They do not fall from trees. They are out there in the grasses. They are all over. They are in Chicago. They come in on your pet, and right now I can hear you laughing. My kid suffers from Lyme disease, all right? It is a debilitating
It's debilitating.
Disease.
It's terrible.
And you must be very, if you did not get the head of it out, you save it. You put it in a little baggie, you date it, because you will become, you will be necessary to become part of a, you know, a study that's done. I cannot tell you how serious this is. I live in Northern Lake County. Like I said, they are all over. And, you know, they are on the little critters, the cute little chipmunks and the squirrels and the birds. And it is just absolutely a horrendous disease.
It is, Karen. And I know some people who have suffered the effects of Lyme disease. And that's why I brought it up, because no one here has ever had a tick.
I've never had a tick
on myself
before.
Could
you tell if you got the head of it, or you can't tell?
It doesn't look like there's anything left in there. And again,
well, I'll be very careful about that. I have had one before. I thought like you did, where it was a, you know, a mole, and I thought, oh God, this is gross. And so what do? I twist it. Well, lo and behold, that is the worst thing you can do.
I pulled it straight out.
Yeah, well, you hopefully got the head of it, all right, because that's what will become the problem. What it's doing is exchanging blood with you back and forth.
And there's tons of bacteria,
Oh, yeah. It is a bacterial infection. It is absolutely the worst of worst.
I'm so sorry about your child, Karen.
Yes. And she's a growing up. I can't tell you how it's, you know, changed her life.
Yeah. Well, we need to thank you so much for calling. And I honestly would like to get someone on Monday or something to talk about
this
if I'm still alive.
Yeah, well,
because I thought you guys would have had experience with ticks, and since you haven't, we need to learn about it, and I got to check myself.
No, I mean, it wasn't unusual for me growing up that people around me would have them. I just don't remember having them. That's why I said you would, you know,
burn
the head off.
This was my first, and you always remember your first.
Yeah, I've had them on my clothes a lot, of northern Wisconsin. You know, we get them once in a while.
Yeah.
The kids have had them, and we pulled them off. Yeah, I haven't. My husband
has pulled them.
But well, I didn't put it in a bag. It's in the garbage. I got to go burn that when I get home.
You got to burn it.
All right, quick break, and it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Megan O'Keefe is on the line. Megan is the deputy editor over at Decider.com, a website that I recommend highly if you're a fan of television or entertainment. Megan, how are things? Everything good?
Everything's great. It's a nice cloudy Friday here in New York, but it's definitely fall weather.
We're getting a little bit of that too, a little bit of haze. Just a little.
Yeah.
Not too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a story I would love to talk to you about because I've been following this the last couple days. Woody Allen has been not blacklisted from Hollywood, but it's been hard to distribute his films. No one is picking up his films because of some allegations made predominantly by one of his children. But Scarlett Johansson is coming to Woody's defense. What can you tell us about this story?
I mean, Scarlett Johansson became one of Woody Allen's primary muses, I guess, in the early aughts. She was in Match Point and Vicky Cristina Barcelona, and the two became very close. And recently, for a Hollywood Reporter interview, she was asked about working with him. Now, in the last couple of years, many actors have started to backtrack on working with him. Greta Gerwig, in particular, was one of the first actresses to say she regretted working with him in one of his movies.
Timothy Chalamet, I remember.
Yes, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a rising star, too. But Scarlett Johansson, when she was asked about it, she apparently paused and then said that she loves him and that she has no problem working with him, that she's pressed him personally on the allegations, and she believes his side of the story, which immediately sort of put her in a very negative news cycle where Marvel fans were calling for the banning of the Black Widow film. But I think more importantly, it might spell doom for some of her Oscar chances this year, because she's had two roles where she's already being hyped for possible nominations, and it sounds like something like this could backfire in the long run. So it'll be very fascinating to see if, you know, she's able to recoup any kind of negativity that has been sort of shown on her.
And Megan, what happened? There was a story a day or so ago about Dylan Farrow. That's the daughter that Woody shares with Mia Farrow, who made the allegations, really condemning Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, she definitely called it, I think I'm looking at the quote here, a truly abhorrent mischaracterization. And she slammed her because, I mean, in the same interview, Scarlett Johansson also talked about her work with Me Too. And I think, you know, Dylan Farrow saw it as sort of a, you know, kind of a double standard.
How can you possibly do both, right? One of those situations?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, she definitely says if you're going to champion these issues, you've got to really listen to all the victims, not just the ones that, you know, implicate the people that you respect and admire and are friends with, because that's where the problems really sort of, you know, come from, people not wanting to turn on those that they would prefer to believe are innocent, you know.
What's going to happen to his career? You know, for a while, he was cranking out about a movie a year, and although his movies didn't make an intense amount of money, they always made some money, but now no one wants to distribute his movies anymore. Will he somehow find a distributor, or do we even care anymore? Has it gotten to that point with him?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's always going to be curiosity around his work, because he is someone who, I mean, for better or worse, was hugely influential in 70s cinema, comedy cinema. I do know that he still is producing about a film per year, but he's doing it mostly in Europe with European investors. Amazon, from what I understand, has dropped their deal with him, because a couple of years ago they had a huge deal for a number of pictures. And one of those was made but put in the can, will never be, that we know, distributed. That film that Timothée Chalamet starred in, apparently it was a character named Gatsby Wells in New York City. But yeah, it's hard to say. The thing is, it's tough because he is someone who has created so many amazing works of cinematic art that have, you know, touched us, have influenced other filmmakers. But at the same time, the way culture is now, we're less likely to sort of give these, you know, creators who have problematic histories, you know, the sort of benefit of the doubt, so to speak.
I just saw something on Decider.com, and you did not do the story. Claire Spellberg did, but I have to bring this up. I accidentally watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and a few hours later, I was still watching it. But there is some news that Kris Jenner is going to be addressing the rumors that she had an affair with O.J. Simpson and that Khloe Kardashian is the offspring. That's coming up this Sunday on Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yes. It seems that they're hyping it up. So apparently they, you know, she's going to finally address the fact that the tabloids keep circulating these rumors that she had an affair with O.J. Simpson. And apparently, you know, in the clip, her voice is shaking. She's really upset. And, you know, this is what she says. After 25 years, you'd think it just wouldn't a thing. We don't know more than that, but it sounds like the implication that she had this affair is, you know, really hurtful to her, and she's going to finally speak out about it this Sunday.
Is OJ going to be part of that taping? Because he is out and available, and I'm surprised he's not pushing himself into, let me dispute these rumors. Wouldn't that be something?
No, it would definitely be something. I somehow doubt that, you know, he's going to pop up as a new character on the show this season. But then I never thought Kanye West would be a character on the show either. And look at what's happened there.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So you never know. It'd be interesting to see if he takes a Twitter, because he's been tweeting a lot now. He's been going after his trolls and, you know, trolling them back. So I feel like if we're going to hear from OJ, it might be in the form of a tweet once we figure out what Kris has to say.
Megan, a couple of years ago, Wendy admitted she had a fling with Homer Simpson on our show, and it didn't change anything for anybody.
Although my kid's yellow. You know, and I mentioned earlier, I was talking about my kids' history class, and they're going to read Devil in the White City. And I forgot Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese are making like a mini series out of this for Netflix. I don't know when that's going to come forward.
Yeah, that has been gestating for like years. I think originally it's going to be a film, and now it's going to be a mini series. I mean, I think it's unclear too if Leo is still going to play H.H. Holmes, but they're still still producing it, and it seems like I think it's Hulu actually is developing the series.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah. So it'll be really fascinating to see how it comes together. That book is phenomenal, and I love the Eric Larson, the author, and I'm really curious to see how much they'll do in Chicago, because I was there last weekend, and you know, there's so many beautiful architectural wonders that could be very easily added to the story, because that's such a huge key part of how the crime came to be.
I have a Scorsese question for you as well, Megan, if you're fielding Scorsese questions. A couple of years ago, they announced that Martin Scorsese was directing a documentary about SCTV, which is, I think, the funniest show of all time. I couldn't wait to see it. Now, we're almost 2 years past that announcement, and I haven't seen anything beyond that. Do you know anything about it? Because I can't find it anywhere.
I definitely remember hearing about it and being excited, cause I, too, am a big sketch comedy nerd. But yeah, I think it was for Netflix, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
But you know, Scorsese is constantly working on things in tandem, I feel like, and they just kind of drop at the same time. Yeah, and he's also prepping Killers of the Flower Moon with DiCaprio. There's a lot going on. But I would expect, because it is sort of like one of those smaller documentaries he's doing, that after The Irishman premieres and is taken care of, we might see it drop sometime like next year if he's still working on it. Because I feel like The Irishman has taken all of his focus for the last year or so.
So I should stop texting him?
I mean, if he texted you back, maybe you guys have a connection I don't know about.
Nope, he's not texting me back yet, not at all.
Okay, not yet.
I want to ask you about Sacha Baron Cohen. I loved his Who is America, and it was funny. He's getting serious. Can we take a quick break and find out more about that?
Absolutely.
It's Megan O'Keefe. She's deputy editor at Decider.com. It's honestly one of the best websites out there if you're into television or entertainment, anything of that ilk. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. We're talking television and entertainment and all things like that with deputy editor from Decider.com, Megan O'Keefe. I did get an alert yesterday, a Sacha Baron Cohen alert that said he's getting serious right now. I think he's amazing. Tell us about this new The Spy on Netflix.
Yeah, it's a new series. It's a drama for him, which is a huge departure from, obviously, Borat and, you know, all this other famous comedy work. But he's playing Eli Cohen, who is a real-life Israeli spy in the 1960s, who is known for infiltrating the Syrian government at the highest levels. He would throw lavish parties where he'd invite dignitaries, catch them in the act of, you know, some less than folksy good moral behavior, use it against them, and even he would kind of mastermind these really elegant ploys to sort of set up the Syrians for, you know, easy pickings for the Israeli forces. He was eventually caught, and he was eventually, put to death for his espionage. But it's a really fascinating tale. It's a really interesting real-life story that we don't hear a lot about here in the States. And I think that Sacha Baron Cohen has always been not so secretly really intelligent and really deep. And I think that people forget that, like, he's a Cambridge scholar. He's, you know, very articulate. And I think it's a really interesting move for him. And I'm really excited to see how audiences react to seeing him being serious.
I have to say, when he commits to a character, he commits 105%. Nobody gives more than he does. So I've seen him do some light traumatic roles before. It'll be interesting to see how he does. Have you seen this already, Megan?
I have not. My colleague Kayla Cobb did, so I'm basically covering her reporting. It's really great on the site, too. But yeah, I'm excited to check it out this weekend. You know, it's definitely on my list.
I'll tell you right now, I did not expect Bill Hader to be so good in Barry and be such a great dramatic actor, so I'm hopeful. Yeah. I like Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
So it's called The Spy on Netflix, and it is out now?
Yes.
Another Netflix project, The Great British Baking Show. I'm going to guess by the title it has something to do with cooking and baking. I'm just taking a stab on this one. Am I right?
It does indeed. It's a very sort of a cult favorite. It's one of my favorite shows. I'm a big Anglophile myself. And it's basically this very sweet reality competition show where they get about 12 or 13 bakers every summer in a tent in the middle of the English countryside, and they have weekly baking challenges. This, you know, it used to be an import that American audiences had to wait a long time for. I first caught it about 5 or 6 years ago on PBS, and even then those seasons were about a year behind what they were in the UK. And then they got to Prime Video, and they got to Netflix. And then over the years, it's become such a cult hit on Netflix that Netflix has now partnered with a production company, and it is a Netflix original. This year is different because for the very first time, Netflix will be rolling out weekly episodes instead of a whole season. So about 3 days after it airs in England on Tuesday nights, it's going to be on Netflix for us in the States. So it's kind of exciting if you're a big Great British Baking Show fan like myself. And it's also kind of a very interesting experiment for Netflix to see if fans will still hook into a weekly rollout as opposed to just the binge model.
And what are they doing differently on a British cooking show that we're not doing on American cooking shows?
Well, they're not starting with the box for cakes. They're going to Genoese sponge and all sorts of things from scratch. They definitely have a more European sense of what kinds of flavors they like, and the biscuits are different. And it's just, it's really fun and really sweet. There definitely is an American version of it you'll see on ABC occasionally. But the British version has a sort of Downton Abbey class to it that's very intoxicating.
Wow. All right. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the Venice Film Festival. This is one of the major film festivals globally. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that just, I believe it wrapped earlier this week, but now TIFF is in effect. There's two international film festivals happening this week that sort of signal the launch of Oscar season. So a lot of films that people were excited for and things that might be nominated have been screened. Some of them have lived up to expectations, like Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver's film Marriage Story, and some have kind of deflated on arrival, like The Aeronauts, which is an Eddie Redmayne Felicity Jones project. But of course, these are just early screenings for critics and press, and the real Oscar race will heat up later on this winter, but you're definitely going to start to hear and see various critics pick their favorites for the Oscar race as early as now.
Are you hearing one or two titles above all the rest yet, or is that not happening yet?
The Joker you're hearing a lot about, but it's not all good. It's very mixed and can be a very controversial film. Yeah, some people love it and some people hate it. So that one, I mean, it's probably poised to be a very big hit for Warner Brothers, and I hear Joaquin Phoenix is great in it, but it's also probably going to be a very you know, controversial take on the character. Marriage Story, again, that's Noah Baumbach's new film that is hugely inspired by his own divorce from Holly Hunter. That one, everyone is raving about it, as well as the performances of Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. I'm hearing good things about The Report, which is another Adam Driver film about the sort of the investigation to see what the CIA did try to torture people during the whole thing against while they throw some of Bin Laden, there was, you know, waterboarding and all that stuff, and it's about sort of the hunt to figure out what really happened.
And Megan, then there's also Adam Driver understands that he can't be in every movie, right? I know he's trying and he's coming close, but you can't be in every movie, Adam Driver.
He's really a good actor.
He's a great actor, but you got to leave something for everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, he's not in a Marvel movie yet. He's in Star Wars.
All right,
but
that's true. Yeah.
But,
speaking of award shows, the Emmys are just a couple of weeks away. Normally, you're bombarded with information about the Emmys a couple of weeks out, but this year I'm hearing almost nothing. Why the lack of information?
I think there's two things. Like, one, there's no host this year, so it's hard to cut promos sort of hyping a certain comedian's arrival. The other thing is, I think as streaming has become sort of dominant in the awards ceremony, some of these shows are a little bit more niche. Like, I'm not sure if every single person has seen Fleabag, I think they should. It's great. But, you know, it's not exactly your Big Bang series that are dominating the Emmys anymore. It's stuff like Russian Doll, stuff like, you know, again, Fleabag. It's these smaller streaming shows that are critically acclaimed, but maybe don't have the popular appeal of an old-school broadcast network show.
I'm trying to talk Wendy into Fleabag. She's not biting yet, but at some point, Wendy, you've got to see it. It's just too good to not,
see it. It's so beautiful. It's hilarious and heartbreaking and just...
All right, that's right up my alley.
You would so love this show. You know how Baskets combines really, really funny with really, really sad in the same
and
scene?
And pathetic, yes.
They do that even better in Fleabag.
I will watch it.
Yeah.
And these things now with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, I'm finding myself able to have such a variety of things. I mean, for a while, I felt like TV was dead, and now it's like I can't wait to get home sometimes to watch this stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's so overwhelming. And it's just, you know, it's kind of exciting. Like, I mean, obviously, at Decider, we try to help people, like, find what they want to watch. But it's cool to constantly be able to find things, too. Like, Fleabag has been around for a couple of seasons now, but it's great. It can still be a recommendation for someone to find for the first time.
Last night, I binged the last season of Orange is the New Black. And I want more. I was left unfulfilled. I really was. It wasn't bad, but I don't know. I need things more explained to me, I think. I don't know. But Orange is the New Black. It took me a while to watch it, but that. So now I have room for something, and it might be Fleabag.
It goes
it
quick.
It might just be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Megan,
yeah,
what,
another show. Yep.
What happens with a show like Orange is the New Black or... S Creek by Eugene Levy, when they know that they're coming to an end and they don't really end on a big, like a punchline note. The show just kind of fades
Same
away.
Same with Baskets.
Yeah,
to
Baskets,
me, I was unfulfilled as well. And it almost leaves the door open for something in the future.
What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I think part of it is there is so much content out there that sometimes it's hard to make a big fuss about a finale. I also think that because there are so many opportunities to bring shows back that sometimes, again, maybe they want to leave things open-ended so they can come back to it in the future. Fleabag, going back to, was supposed to be a one-season show, and then, you know, years later she had another idea and was able to come back to it because I guess she left it so open-ended. And I think that's good if the creators are so inspired and that they are coming from a point of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It can get sort of not so good if it feels like an obvious cash grab, like they're just coming together for, you know, the money and the ratings, and they don't really have any new ideas. So,
Big Bang Theory.
That can be sort of...
And speaking of Russian Doll, I didn't even know where they were. I'm glad it was renewed and there's going to be a second season, but I didn't even know where they could go from that. So there's that as well.
Yeah, apparently I think they have ideas for at least 3 seasons, from what I understand, which I hope is true. They were working on it for years, so I think the team of Natasha Lyonne, Leslie Headland, and Amy Poehler, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I agree, the first season was so perfect that I'm very curious to see where it goes next.
Megan, great talking to you. We appreciate you being here, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's Megan O'Keefe, the deputy editor over at Decider.com. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then a very special guest. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. When we return, one of the stars of Fear the Walking Dead, and he's got a definite tie-in to this radio station, to WGN. His dad kind of works here.
And can I just say, going over his IMDb, I have seen him
in so many
things.
Yes.
Like, I never had any idea who he was or who he was related to.
Is that true?
None whatsoever.
Just you wait.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah. Peter Jacobson will join us right after the news. The news, by the way, coming right now. It's 11:30. Here's Jen DeSalvo. Jen, thanks very much. Peter Jacobson joins us on the phone line right now. Peter is an accomplished actor, the son of our own Walter Jacobson, and he has a very exciting new role. Peter, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Nice to hear you guys. I had Cubs anxiety is now compounded by Bears anxiety.
Oh, how about it?
And I just made me wake up in a different mood. So what can I say?
Peter, I said before we had you on, and I'm embarrassed to say, I did not know the connection of who you were related to. I didn't know exactly who you were. I saw your face. Oh, my God, I've seen you in everything.
Yes, and that's, yeah, I'm Walter's kid, and I guess I've been in a lot.
Peter, is it safe to say you're one of those actors, and we've had so many great actors in this bracket for years and years and years, who people see in things constantly, and then they're not sure who that, like, where do I know that guy from? You're the king of those guys.
I think that happens a lot. I am. My Twitter page says that guy from that show. That's it. But sometimes it's not just actors. I walk down the street and people stop and they're like, oh, they think I'm their lawyer. They think I'm their dentist or somebody who works at the office. They sometimes just don't quite get the connection. And even if they do think I'm an actor, yes, often it's, how do I know you? What show was it?
But
it's fine with me. It just means I'm working.
That's a benefit, isn't it?
Isn't it an actor's an actor's job, though, as you know, is to become the character. You've done this so many times. I think that's the ultimate compliment of people thinking that of you. It's like, I know you, but from where?
Yeah, and then the next step of that is that often, I for some reason, I don't know why, I play a lot of jerks.
Yeah.
I mean, the latest, Fear the Walking Dead is not, but on House and other shows, it's often somebody who's not the nicest or a little bit conniving, and so sometimes people say they're surprised that I'm not that way, and then I feel like I've really done my job as an actor. If I've convinced people that I am something that I'm inherently not, then I've succeeded.
Are those roles more fun for you?
Oh, yeah. It's always the worse, the better. Colony was a good one. I've done this show, Colony, for a while, and he was a really sort of icky but fun character. And you know, those are the best.
Why is that? I've heard so many actors over the years, Peter, say exactly that playing the villain, that's the fun part, not the good guy, but the bad or the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Why? How come?
Well, unless you truly are villainous in real life, which most aren't, I think it's fun to push the edges of places that you wouldn't get to go. It's sort of that fantasy of get to do things and, you know, do things that I can't do in real life. Not that we want to do villainous things, but just the idea of stretching outside of your normal comfort zone or what you know is always exciting. Like for me, for Fear the Walking Dead, they have an episode where people were riding around on horses, and I was a little bit devastated that they had not written my character to be out on the horse, because I don't ride horses, and all I want to do is ride horses, because I don't get to do it. So it's the same idea.
Let me read you a headline, Peter, from Forward.com. Here's what it says. Rabbi Zombie Slayer joins Fear the Walking Dead. Those are words that you rarely hear together.
I know. That's outside my normal way of living. Not a rabbi. Most rabbis don't kill zombies, so right. I was thrilled to come along.
Were you a fan of the Walking Dead franchise prior to getting cast in the role?
Do you want my honest answer?
Yes,
my dishonest answer.
No, honest.
My honest answer is no, that I didn't know the shows. It just wasn't my thing. I had not trying to avoid by any stretch, just there's so much TV, of course, now it just hadn't quite gotten there on my list yet. I know people who were in the shows and had heard that they were having a great time doing them and that they were fun, and my son is into, you know, comic book stuff, and so I had an ear towards it, but once I got cast, I sort of started watching as much as I could, and it's really fun stuff, and I'm thrilled to be a part. Just, you know, it's been great.
Does it come up at all during the audition process? Does anybody ever say to you while auditioning, do they say, hey, just out of curiosity, are you a little schooled on the history of the show? Does that come up or not come up?
It does. Fortunately, this one was just an offer for me. I didn't have to audition, which was very nice, so I didn't have that awkward moment, but I have been in auditions where the assumption is that I've known more than I did. And, you know, nobody expects you to, you know, watch season after season of a show before an audition, but it's good, you know, an actor wants to be as informed as they possibly can about every part of the project they're looking at within reason. And I've been tripped up by that.
You know what's interesting to me? Do you know who Ross Marquand is? He's on Walking Dead, on the other Walking Dead franchise, the original one.
I don't know him, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. He told Wendy and I that he was a huge fan of the show, knew every episode inside out, but he didn't want to let the producers know that. You know, it's just the opposite of your story.
Like he didn't want to be taken as a fanboy? Like,
yeah.
Right. Or you feel like you're maybe brown-nosing or, you know, excited. That's strange. I went to an audition. It's a tough line to call. You know, this business is strange. There's, you know, it's always good to be pushing yourself. There's a lot of politics. It's all about networking, and yet you've got to sort of know where to draw the line. I mean, if we're talking, my father is if I may, you know who he is. He's, you know, as a journalist, he grew up and he made a name for himself being, you know, just pushy, you know, there, you know, no hold barred. He, Walter is Walter because he leaves no stone unturned and will make any phone call and shies away from nothing. I think that's sort of the romantic image of him, and I think it was appropriately gained. And there were moments as my career began where he would sort of take that idea and say, you got to call this person. You know, shouldn't you push in there or let me call?
Yeah.
Or, you know, push. And I would often have to say, whoa, in my business, it's just a little more subtle than that. You know, there are different kinds of relationships. You just, it's a softer hand. The most aggressive person does not always get the job, nor do they often even come off the nicest. So it was an important lesson for me to learn and for him to learn to back the hell off when I told him. But I always appreciated his desire. It was always came out of a place of just wanting to support and love, and that sure. was really all that mattered.
Yeah.
Peter Jacobson's on the line with us. We were talking about his father, Walter Jacobson, right there. And you are going to be a regular on Fear the Walking Dead, Rabbi Jacob Kestner. I'm looking at your IMDb page, and the first acting role you got was, according to this, NYPD Blue, you and David Schwimmer. You started on that show.
Schwimmer was in there?
Yes, he played like 4B or something. That was his character name. I watched it every episode of that, and I wanted to know if you did start wearing short-sleeve shirts with a tie like Dennis Franz.
Dennis Franz, right. No, I didn't. I was tempted to. The amazing thing to me about NYPD Blue was that Dennis Franz, who was such a Chicago guy, and there was no effort to ever change that great Chicago accent, and this was such a New York show. And it's a guy talking like Dennis Franz, Dennis Farina, these great Chicago actors in this New York show. And I just thought, I was always like, why does this guy have such a great Chicago accent in this New York show? Also, that was my first TV role. I played a pushy reporter.
Love it.
So, you know.
1993. Okay. I mean, really.
That long ago.
Yeah.
I did not know that Schwimmer was in it. I was just a little kid. I ran out of school.
Oh, man.
So, no, I think I had one line. I remember, and I just remember that was that first really herky-jerky camera.
Yeah.
Thing, the shows where the Steadicam was all over the place.
Yes.
And I didn't know. I was surprised I even made it into frame. So.
Peter, did your dad want you to go into a similar line of work as him, or was he steering you in other directions, or not at all?
No steering at all. I was very fortunate that he was always I think he enjoyed that I enjoyed it, acting so much, and that I was that committed, and he just wanted to support me in whatever way he could. I think growing up, going to the newsroom, I was always going with him to the newsroom at night when I was a kid and adolescent. I just loved being around. So I finished my homework and go with him to be at the 10 o'clock news, and they had that open newsroom space. And I would just love being around it, and I would sit with him while he had put his makeup on before the show. And I don't think that, you know, my dad as an anchorman and as a commentator, there was a real theatricality there. And, I mean, it's not acting, of course, but I think I was intrigued and loved a lot of it, and I think that might have gotten me started in a way.
You know, I'm sure you're aware of this. He's immensely proud of you, but what's happened a couple times in the last 2 years is I have to inform him of shows that you're on. Do you know that?
Yeah, he's always, I get that from a lot of my family. You know, when you're on a bunch of shows, which
yes.
I'm very fortunate to be on, you shoot a month ago. I shot, you know, I shoot something in November, and it doesn't come on until January, February. I just forget. It's like, you know, and my family, you know, they comes on and they get informed by somebody else, and they're like, why didn't you tell me? And I'm like, because I had no idea it was coming on. So I don't feel too guilty. I feel guilty, but just not that guilty.
Not that guilty.
I was there when Bill said, hey, Walter, we're going to have your son on. Really?
How come?
Why? Why? And, oh, well, he's going to be regular on Fear the Walking.
I told him that he knows about this show, but he did not know that it was imminent. So I give him a little bit of credit for that. Thank you for keeping him posted.
That's my job.
You guys.
I'm more than happy to.
I appreciate it.
All right. I know this is a weird, very strange question. I know this going in. When you were on House, you were married to an actress named Jennifer Crystal, who is the daughter of Billy Crystal. Did she talk much about her? Because I am such a fan of Billy Crystal's. Was there much talk about him? Did he show up ever?
No.
No?
No, never showed up. Didn't talk. But interestingly, I had done, both Jennifer and I had been in his movie, his baseball movie, HBO movie 61.
Oh,
after,
wow.
Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris. It was a great. It was right after the Mark McGuire home run.
Yeah.
Sosa home run. And he made this wonderful HBO movie. And it was my first sort of substantial role. And I played a pushy reporter. But I kind of was learning the ropes on that movie and spent a lot of time working with him. And Jennifer was also in that, but we didn't really meet there on that movie. But we talked about that later on. But I felt like a little bit of family-ish just because I had spent some time with Billy Crystal, and that's always memorable because he is literally the funniest human being on the planet, and he's just a joy to be around. And she was great. We had a lot of fun.
Oh, good.
As husband and wife.
I'm so glad to hear this. What happens when you join a show that's already been going for a while, and you've done this several times. You did it with House. Where you're joining a kind of a crew that kind of knows each other, and you're the new kid on the block. What is that like to adapt into that world?
That's always strange, but I've gotten used to it. It depends on the show. I've been really lucky. I mean, the shows that I've done that on, like House and Fear, were just the cast are wonderful, and actors are usually great, and there's a whole welcoming process. And, well, not an actual process, but just the welcoming is easy and fun. And, you know, Fear is this big, sprawling cast, and they're just, everybody just is really wonderful. And the conditions are rough down there in Austin. It is hot. For me, you know, growing up in Chicago, but it was really fun, and it's just, it's a real camaraderie there. House was different and weirder because my entrance into that show was this weird, contrived audition, season-long audition process. So there was a handful of us new doctors being auditioned as part of the show for the whole season, and it was happening in real life. The writers were trying to decide who they wanted to keep. So there was, that was a weird tension, and the auditionees, you know, Cal Penn and Olivia Wilde and the rest of us were, who did get chosen, but there were others, and we all sort of bonded over that in a weird kind of, you know, intense little way, but, and that was a little bit stranger than most and odd, but still, you know, you get on a show like that and Fear that are really successful and just smooth running. House had been going for 4 years already. Fear's been on for a long time. It's easier to move into that because it's such a smooth operation. This show Colony that I was, when you build it from the start, there's just a lot more sort of clunkiness you've got to go through. But I'll take either of them.
Sure. Yep.
All right, and tell us about The Goldfinch. You will be in this movie with Nicole Kidman, Sarah Paulson, Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about that?
Have not seen it. The book just blew me away. I loved it so much, so I was so thrilled to get a chance to be in it. The director is this Englishman who did, I think he's English. I'm sorry if I blew that. He directed the movie Brooklyn, which was wonderful, and he's just got a really lovely artistic touch in this story. I don't know, you know, if you've read the book, it's sprawling and deep and scary, and I think it's going to be kind of epic in its own artistic way. I play a small sort of quirky character and shot out in Albuquerque, which was fun, and didn't get to work with Finn, which disappointed my son because he's a huge Stranger Things fan, so I tried to, you know, I got a picture of him. That was the best I could do.
Oh. Peter, are you okay with me telling your dad that you're in that movie, or would you rather I not?
You know what? Since this is the start of a meaningful relationship for us, and I'm going to expect you to do this, yes.
All right. I'll tell your dad today.
Might as well just bite the bullet, jump in, water's warm, go. This is
All right. Very, very good.
Yeah, please. Keep us posted on what you're in, and Bill will be the liaison you and your father.
Yeah, if you can also let him know that I'll try to call him later on tonight. After dinner, I appreciate that.
All right. That's easy. All right. It's so much fun talking to you, and I've been a fan for years, and I'm so glad you're working as steadily as you are, because you bring just new things to every role. It's always fun to watch what you bring to a role.
Thank you. That is, any actor wants to hear that. I really appreciate it. That's nice to hear. Thank you.
So nice to talk to you, and we hope to again when you're in something new. So nice to meet you.
All right.
Thanks,
you
Peter.
Too. Take care, guys. Thanks
okay,
a lot.
That's
bye-bye.
Peter Jacobson. You can see him as the Rabbi Zombie Slayer on Fear the Walking Dead.
Coming up, we would like to invite you to join us on our bonus hour, the stream of consciousness, WGN Extra, if you will. You can hear us talk about what's hot and what's cold, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Wendy, we have two sad celebrity deaths to report. We only have time for one. I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to talk about Robert Mugabe, the strong man who was the president of Zimbabwe? Or do you want to talk about Carol Lynley, the actress from the Poseidon Adventure?
If I had to choose, I'd go Carol Lynley.
Yeah, let's go Carol Lynley. Very, very wise call. Carol Lynley has passed away.
Sorry for the other death, though.
Yes, of course. She was 77 years old. Best known in all accounts, everybody who's writing about her puts her work in the Poseidon Adventure as what you'd probably best remember her as. She was the singer aboard the ship when the ship capsized on the Poseidon Adventure, who made friends with Red Buttons, which, why wouldn't,
who wouldn't?
You? You would, that'd be your first move in a maritime disaster, is pal around with Red Buttons. But if you look at her IMDb list, it goes on and on and on and on and on. She was also, let's see, there's too many of these to read, but Return to Peyton Place, Under the Yum Yum Tree, Bunny Lake is Missing, The Pleasure Seekers, The Cardinal.
Quincy.
Quincy.
Fantasy Island.
Oh, was she on Fantasy Island?
The Love Boat, although who wasn't? Charlie's Angels.
If you did one, I think you had to sign a deal. If you were on Fantasy Island or The Love Boat, you also had to be on the other. I don't think they would allow you to just do one.
Right.
You had to be on both.
Heart to Heart she was on.
Oh.
She was really pretty, and I thought her name was Carolyn Lee, L-E-E, and it says that she was born Carol Ann Jones and began her professional career as Carolyn Lee.
Oh.
And then it switched. I guess people were probably just going, Carolyn Lee. Carolyn Lee, yes. Isn't that strange?
Yes.
I would have kept it Carolyn Lee.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know any of that. She had a long on-again, off-again, according to the story, a long on-again, off-again relationship.
With whom?
With British talk show host David Frost.
I do remember that.
I kind of remember that as well.
She was really pretty.
Very, very pretty lady. A good actress. I remember the controversy in Poseidon Adventure was that they wanted her to sing at the Academy Awards that song, The Morning After, which was a big hit, but not from her.
Melissa McGovern.
Yeah.
Who was it?
But then it was discovered that even in the movie, it was not Carol Lindley singing. They had another actress dub her singing voice in the movie because the original thought was, well, she sang it in the movie. Let's bring her out to the Academy Awards and sing it there. But it wasn't even her singing it. So that never it never happened.
Maureen McGovern. She didn't sing it in the movie?
No. It was another actress whose name escapes me. Not a famous actress, but somebody who, you know, was predominantly known for their singing more than their acting.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a great song.
But a very sad sad news. 77 years old, like I said.
Too young.
Remember seeing her in anything in years and years and years. I think she retired years ago because there was a time where she was in tons of stuff, but that kind of stopped.
Yeah, I can't think of the... She was in an episode of Kojak, too. Who loves you, Lindley?
was that a clip from the show,
yes,
or was that you?
Yeah, she hasn't worked since 2006.
Oh, it has been a while.
Yeah.
Always reminded me of a gentler Tuesday Weld.
Yeah.
Right? That same kind of emotion from her, but a little softer. Just
You're
a little gentler.
A really strange individual.
Because why?
A softer Tuesday Weld.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever...
Tuesday Weld could have a little bit of edge to her, but Carol Lindley, or even Yvette Mimieux, Wendy, if you will. Will
I
you?
Will.
You will? All right, good. We'll cover.
And can I give an update to all the listeners who have freaked me out about getting bit by a tick?
Oh, you're reading the text?
Yeah.
It's a very scary bunch of things that could be happening to you. Are you getting tested?
Well, I got a tick. I found a tick last night, and I removed it straight out. I think I got everything, put alcohol and Neosporin, but everybody's saying, go see your doctor. So I have a call into the doctor to see if I need to start some antibiotic.
Yes, yes.
And the doctor's assistant called back and said, I forgot to ask you, where on your body did you get bit? And I said, from the tick?
Yeah.
No, it was just on, like, my stomach, I guess.
Oh, why the?
I don't know.
That's
so they're going
to
call
me
back.
To know that,
and I'm not. I don't mean to blame Indiana. Okay, I don't know if that's where
it sounded
I got
like
it.
You were blaming Indiana, but you're not.
No, you can take the girl out of Indiana, but the tick comes with. I don't know.
I can quote you on that.
Yes.
I will quote you on that then.
But I am calling my doctor. So listeners, many of you, thanks for scaring me.
Yes. Yes, I'm reading the text.
I know.
Going,
I know.
Uh-oh. You better see somebody fast.
Although you're not telling me, like, Wendy, I'm worried about you. You're just...
I'm saving it till the end. I'm saving it till the bonus hour.
It's got to be a morning after, doesn't there?
Yes.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, 720 WGN. All right, my button is stuck, Bill, so I'm getting a little reverb here.
You should see a doctor then, Wendy. Get into a doctor quickly. All right.
Can I ask where the button is?
No, Steve, you don't want to ask that.
Okay.
Do not ask that. Long meeting after the show. All right, Steve, we're going to the stream. You can't come with us because you've got a show to do.